One of the hunters broke through the grass, breathing as hard as Kara. His fist gripped his bow. Fingers curled over an arrow shaft, kept it in place and ready. In his other hand, his thumb held a knife to his palm, while his first two fingers kept the arrow knocked and tensioned on the string. Juni had no weapons with him. "What has happened to Juni?" the hunter demanded, his gaze sweeping the flat country for threat. Kaelin shook her head. "He must have fallen and struck his head."
"And her?"
he asked, tipping his head toward Kara.
"We don't know yet," Kaelin said, as she watched Richard close Juni's eyes. "We only just found him."
"Looks like he's been here for a while," Kara said to Richard.
Kaelin tugged on red leather, and Kara slumped willingly to the bank, sitting back on her heels. Kaelin parted Kara's blonde hair, inspecting the wound. It didn't look grievous.
"Kara, what happened? What's going on?"
"Are you hurt badly?" Richard asked atop Kaelin's words. Kara lifted a dismissive hand toward Richard, but didn't object when Kaelin scooped cold water in her hand and tried to pour it over the cut to the side of her temple. Richard wrapped his fingers around a fistful of grass and tore it off. He dunked it in the water and handed it to Kaelin.
"Use this."
Kara's face had turned from the rage of before to a chalky gray.
"I'm all right."
Kaelin wasn't so sure. Kara looked unsteady. Kaelin patted the wet grass to the woman's forehead before wiping away at the blood. Kara sat passively.
"So what happened?" Kaelin asked.
"I don't know,"
Kara said.
"I was going to check on him, and here he comes right up a stream, walking hunched over like he was watching something. I called to him. I asked him where his weapons were while I made motions, like he had done back in the village, pretending to use a bow to show him what I meant."
Kara shook her head in disbelief.
"He ignored me. He went back to watching the water. I thought he had left his post to catch a stupid fish, but I didn't see anything in the water. He suddenly charged ahead as if his fish was trying to flee."
Color rushed into Kara's face.
"I was looking to the side, checking the area. He caught me off balance and my feet slipped out from under me. My head hit a rock. I don't know how long it took before I regained my senses. I was wrong to trust him."
"No, you weren't," Richard said. "We don't know what he was chasing." By now, the rest of the hunters had appeared. Kaelin held up a hand, halting their tumbling questions. When they fell silent, she translated Kara's description of what had happened. They listened, dumbfounded. This was one of Chandelin's men. Chandelin's men didn't leave their duty of protecting people to chase a fish.
"I'm sorry, Lord Rawl," Kara whispered. "I can't believe he caught me off guard like that, over a stupid fish."
Richard put a concerned hand on her shoulder.
"I'm just glad you're all right, Kara. Maybe you better lie down. You don't look so good."
"My stomach just feels upside down, that's all. I'll be fine after I've rested for a minute. How did Juni die?"
"He was running and must have tripped and fallen," Kaelin said.
"I almost did that myself. He must have hit his head like you did and blacked out. Fortunately, he blacked out face down in the water and drowned."
Kaelin started to translate as much to the other hunters when Richard spoke.
"I don't think so."
Kaelin paused.
"It had to be.
Look at his knees. They're not skinned, nor his elbows or the heels of his hands." Richard turned Juni's head. "No blood, no mark. If he fell and was knocked unconscious, then why doesn't he at least have a bump on his head? The only place his mud paint is scraped off is on his nose and chin, from his face resting on the gravel of the stream bottom."
"You mean you don't think he drowned?"
Kaelin asked.
"I didn't say that, but I don't see any sign that he fell."
Richard studied the body for a moment.
"It looks like he drowned. That would be my guess, anyway. The question is, why?"
Kaelin shifted to the side, giving the hunters room to squat beside their fallen comrade, to touch him in compassion and sorrow. The open plain suddenly seemed a very lonely place. Kara pressed the wad of wet grass to the side of her head.
"And even if he was disregarding his guard duty to chase a fish, hard to believe, why would he leave all his weapons? And how could he drown in inches of water if he didn't fall and hit his head?"
The hunters wept silently as their hands caressed Juni's young face. Tenderly, Richard's hand joined theirs.
"What I'd like to know is what he was chasing. What put that look in his eyes?"
Chapter 4 Thunder rumbled in from the grassland, echoing through the narrow passageways as Richard, Kara, and Kaelin left the building where Juni's body had been laid out to be prepared for burial. The building was no different from the other buildings in the Mud People's village. Thick walls of mud brick plastered over with clay, and a roof of grass thatch.
Only the spirit house had a tile roof. All the windows in the village were glassless, some covered with heavy coarse cloth to keep out the weather. With the buildings being all the same drab color, it wasn't hard to imagine the village as lifeless ruins. Tall herbs, raised as offerings for evil spirits, grew in three pots on a short wall, but lent little life to the passageway, frequented mostly by the amorphous wind. As two chickens scattered out of their way, Keelan gathered her hair in one hand to keep the gusts from whipping it against her face. People, some in tears, rushed past, going to see the fallen hunter. It somehow made Keelan feel worse to have to leave Junie in a place smelling of sour, wet, rotting hay. The three of them had waited until Nissel, the old healer, had shuffled in and inspected the body. She said she didn't think the neck was broken, nor did she see any other kind of injury from a fall. She had pronounced that Junie had drowned. When Richard asked how that could have happened, she seemed surprised by the question, apparently believing it to be obvious. She had declared it a death caused by evil spirits. The mud people believed that in addition to the ancestors' spirits they called in a gathering, evil spirits also came from time to time to claim a life in recompense for a wrong. Death might be inflicted through sickness, an accident, or in some otherworldly manner. An uninjured man drowning in 6 inches of water seemed a self-evident otherworldly cause of death as far as Nissel was concerned. Chandelin and his hunters believed Nissel. Nissel hadn't had the time to speculate on what transgression might have angered the evil spirits. She had to rush off to a more gratifying job. Her help was needed in delivering a baby. In her official capacity as a confessor, Helen had visited the mud people a number of times, as she had visited other peoples of the Midlands. Though some lands closed their borders to everyone else, no land of the Midlands, regardless of how insular, secluded, distrustful, or powerful, dared close its borders to a confessor. Among other things, confessors kept justice honest, whether or not rulers wished it so. The confessors were advocates before the council for all those who had no other voice. Some, like the mud people, were distrustful of outsiders and sought no voice. They simply wanted to be left alone. Caelan saw that their wishes were respected. The mother confessor's word before the council was law and final. Of course, that had all changed. As with other peoples of the Midlands, Caelan had studied not only the mud people's language, but their beliefs. In the Wizard's Keep in Aidendrill, there were books on the languages, governance, faiths, foods, arts, and habits of every people of the Midlands. She knew that the mud people often left offerings of rice cakes and nosegays of fragrant herbs before small clay figures and several of the empty buildings at the north end of the village. The buildings were left for the exclusive use of the evil spirits, which the clay figures represented. The mud people believed that when the evil spirits occasionally became angered and took a life, the soul of the slain went to the underworld to join the good spirits who watched over the mud people, and thus helped keep the malevolent spirits in check. Balance between worlds was thus only enhanced, and so they believed that evil was self-limiting. Though it was early afternoon, it felt like dusk as Caelan, Richard, and Kara made their way across the village. Low dark clouds seemed to boil just above the roofs. Lightning struck closer, the flash illuminating the high walls of the buildings. A painfully sharp crack of thunder followed almost immediately, jarring the ground. Gusty wind smacked fat drops of rain against the back of Caelan's head. In a way, she was glad for the rain. It would douse the fires. It wasn't right to have celebration fires burning when a man had died. The rain would spare someone the disconcerting task of having to put out what was left of the joyful fires. Out of respect, Richard had carried Junie the entire way back. The hunters understood. Junie had died while on guard protecting Richard and Caelan. Kara, however, had quickly come to a different conclusion. Junie had turned from protector to threat. The how or why wasn't important, just that he had. She intended to be prepared the next time one of them suddenly transformed into a menace. Richard had had a brief argument with her about it. The hunters hadn't understood their words, but recognized the heat in them and hadn't asked for a translation. In the end, Richard let the issue drop. Kara was probably just feeling guilty about letting Junie get past her. Helen took Richard's hand as they walked behind, letting Kara have her way and walk point, checking for danger in a village of friends, as she turned them down first one passageway and then another, leading the way to Zed and Anne. Despite her conviction that Kara was wrong, Caelan did feel inexplicably uneasy. She saw Richard glance over his shoulder with that searching look that told her he was feeling anxious too. "What's wrong?" she whispered. Richard's gaze swept the empty passageway. He shook his head in frustration.
The hair at the back of my neck is prickling like someone is watching me, but no one is there. While she did feel unsettled, she didn't know if she really felt malevolent eyes watching, or it was just his suggestion that kept her glancing over her shoulder. Hurrying along the gloomy alleys between hulking buildings, she rubbed the icy goose flesh nettling up her arms. The rain was just starting to come down in earnest as Kara reached the place she was seeking. Ajeel at the ready, she checked to each side of the narrow passageway before opening the simple wooden door and slipping inside first. Wind whipped Keelan's hair across her face. Lightning flashed and thunder boomed. One of the chickens roaming the passageway, frightened by the thunder and lightning, darted between her legs and ran in ahead of them. A low fire burned in the small hearth in the corner of the humble room. Several fat tallow candles sat on a wooden shelf plastered into the wall beside the domed hearth. Small pieces of firewood and bundled grass were stored beneath the shelf. A buckskin hide on the dirt floor before the hearth provided the only formal seating. A cloth hanging over a glassless window flapped open in the stronger gusts, fluttering the candle flames. Richard shouldered the door shut and latched it against the weather. The room smelled of the candles, the sweet aroma of the bundled grass burning in the hearth, and pungent smoke that failed to escape through the vent in the roof above the hearth.
"They must be in the back rooms," Kara said, indicating with her ajeel a heavy hide hanging over a doorway.
The chicken, its head twitching from side to side as it clucked contentedly, strutted around the room, circling the symbol drawn with a finger or maybe stick in the dirt floor. From a young age, Kaelin had seen wizards and sorceresses draw the ancient emblem representing the creator, life, death, the gift, and the underworld. They drew it in idle daydreaming and in times of anxiety. They drew it merely to comfort themselves, to remind themselves of their connection to everyone and everything. And they drew it to conjure magic. To Kaelin, it was a comforting talisman of her childhood, of a time when the wizards played games with her, or tickled her and chased her through the halls of the wizard's keep as she squealed with laughter. Sometimes they told her stories that made her gasp in wonder as she sat in their laps, protected and safe. There was a time before the discipline began when she was allowed to be a child. Those wizards were all dead now. All but one had given their lives to help her in her struggle to cross the boundary and find help to stop Dark and Rawl. The one had betrayed her. But there was a time when they were her friends, her playmates, her uncles, her teachers, the objects of her reverence and love.
"I've seen this before," Kara said, briefly considering the drawing on the floor. "Dark and Rawl would sometimes draw it."
"It's called a grace," Kaelin said. Wind lifted the square of coarse cloth covering the window, allowing the harsh glare of lightning to cascade across the grace drawn on the floor. Richard's mouth opened, but he hesitated, his question unasked. He was eyeing the chicken pecking at the floor near the hide curtain to the back rooms. He gestured.
"Kara, open the door, please."
As she pulled it open, Richard waved his arms to coax the chicken out. The chicken, feathers flying as it flapped its wings in fright, darted this way and that, trying to avoid him. It wouldn't cross the room to the open door in safety. Richard paused, hands on hips, puzzling down at the chicken. Black markings in the white and brown feathers gave it a striated, dizzying effect. The chicken squawked in complaint as Richard began moving forward, using his legs to shepherd the confused bird across the room. Before it reached the drawing on the floor, it let out a squall, flapped its wings in renewed panic, and broke to the side, sprinting around the wall of the room and finally out the door. It was an astonishing display of an animal so terrified it was unable to flee in a straight line to a wide-open door in safety. Kara shut the door behind it.
"If there is an animal dumber than a chicken," she griped, "I've yet to see it."
"What's all the racket?"
came a familiar voice. It was Zed, coming through the doorway to the back rooms. He was taller than Kaelin, but not as tall as Richard, about Kara's height, although his mass of wavy white hair sticking out in disarray lent an illusion of more height than was there. Heavy maroon robes with black sleeves and cowled shoulders fostered the impression that his stick-like frame was bulkier than it really was. Three rows of silver brocade circled the cuffs of his sleeves. Thicker gold brocade ran around the neck and down the front. A red satin belt set with a gold buckle gathered the outfit at his waist. Zed had always worn unassuming robes. For a wizard of his rank and authority, the fancy outfit was bizarre in the extreme. Flamboyant clothes marked one with the gift as an initiate. For one without the gift, such clothes befit nobility in some places, or a wealthy merchant just about anywhere, so although Zed disliked the flashy accoutrements, they had been a valuable disguise. Richard and his grandfather embraced joyously, both chortling with the pleasure of being together. It had been a long time. "Zed," Richard said, holding the other at arm's length, apparently even more disoriented by his grandfather's outfit than was Kalin. "Where did you ever get such clothes?" With a thumb, Zed tilted the gold buckle up to his scrutiny. His hazel eyes sparkled.
"It's the gold buckle, isn't it? A bit too much."
Anne lifted aside the heavy hide, hanging over the doorway as she ducked under it. Short and broad, she wore an unadorned dark wool dress that marked her authority as the leader of the Sisters of the Light, sorceresses from the old world, although she had created the illusion among them that she had been killed, so as to have the freedom to pursue important matters. She looked as old as Zed, though Kalin knew her to be a great deal older.
"Zed, quit preening," Anne said. "We have business."
Zed shot her a scowl. Having seen such a scowl going in both directions, Kalin wondered how the two of them had managed to travel together without more than verbal sparks. Kalin had met Anne only the day before, but Richard held her in great regard, despite the circumstances under which he had come to know her. Zed took in Richard's outfit.
"I must say, my boy, you're quite the sight yourself."
Richard had been a woods guide, and had always worn simple clothes, so Zed had never seen him in his new attire. He'd found most of his distant predecessor's outfit in the wizard's keep. Apparently, some wizards once wore more than simple robes, perhaps in forewarning. The tops of Richard's black boots were wrapped with leather thongs, pinned with silver emblems embossed with geometric designs, and covered black wool trousers. Over a black shirt was a black, open-sided tunic, decorated with symbols twisting along a wide gold band running all the way around its squared edges. His wide, multi-layered leather belt cinched the magnificent tunic at his waist. The belt bore more of the silver emblems and carried a gold-worked pouch to each side. Hooked on the belt was a small leather purse. At each wrist he wore a wide, leather-padded silver band bearing linked rings encompassing more of the strange symbols. His broad shoulders held a resplendent cape that appeared like nothing so much as spun gold. Even without his sword, he looked at once noble and sinister, regal and deadly. He looked like a commander of kings, and like the embodiment of what the prophecies had named him, the bringer of death. Under all that, Kalin knew him to still possess the kind and generous heart he had as a woods guide. Rather than diminish all the rest, his simple sincerity only reinforced the veracity of it. His sinister appearance was both warranted and in many ways an illusion. While single-minded and fierce in opposition to their foes, Kalin knew him to be profoundly gentle, understanding, and kind. She had never known a man more fair or patient. She thought him the most rare person she had ever met. Anne smiled broadly at Kalin, touching her face much as a kindly grandmother might do with a beloved child. Kalin felt heartwarming honesty in the gesture, her eyes sparkling, and did the same to Richard. Fingering gray hair into the loose bun at the back of her head, she turned to feed a small stick of bundled grass into the fire.
"I hope your first day married is going well."
Kalin briefly met Richard's gaze.
"A little earlier today we went to the warm springs for bath."
Kalin's smile along with Richard's faded.
"One of the hunters guarding us died."
Her words brought the full attention of both Zed and Anne.
"How?"
Anne asked.
"Drowned."
Richard held out a hand in invitation for everyone to sit. "The stream was shallow, but near as we can tell, he didn't stumble or fall." He waggled a thumb over his shoulder as the four of them settled around the grace drawn in the dirt in the center of the room. "We took him to a building back there." Zed glanced over Richard's shoulder, almost as if he might be able to see through the wall and view Junie's body.
"I'll have a look."
He peered up at Kara, standing guard with her back against the door.
"What do you think happened?"
Without hesitation, Kara said,
"I think Junie became a danger. While looking for Lord Rawl in order to harm him, Junie fell and drowned."
Zed's eyebrows arched. He turned to Richard.
"A danger? Why would the man turn belligerent toward you?"
Richard scowled over his shoulder at the Mord Sith. "Kara's wrong. He wasn't trying to harm us." Satisfied when she didn't argue, he returned his attention to his grandfather.
"When we found him, dead, he had an odd look in his eyes. He saw something before he died that left a mask of, I don't know, longing or something on his face. Nissel, the healer,
came and inspected his body. She said he had no injuries, but that he drowned. Richard braced a forearm on his knee as he leaned in. Drowned, Zed, in 6 inches of water. Nissel said evil spirits killed him. Zed's eyebrows rose even higher.
Evil spirits?
The mud people believe evil spirits sometimes come and take the life of a villager, Keelan explained. The villagers leave offerings before clay figures in a couple of the buildings over there. She lifted her chin toward the north. Apparently, they believe that leaving rice cakes will appease these evil spirits, as if evil spirits could eat or could be easily bribed. Outside, the rain lashed at the buildings. Water ran in a dark stain below the window and dripped here and there through the grass roof. Thunder rumbled almost constantly, taking the place of the now silent drums.
Ah, I see, Anne said.
She looked up with a smile Keelan found curious.
So you think the mud people gave you a paltry wedding compared to the grand affair you would have had back in Aidenrill?
Perplexed, Keelan's brow tightened.
Of course not. It was the most beautiful wedding we could have wished for. Really?
Anne swept her arm out, indicating the surrounding village.
People in gaudy dress and animal skins, their hair slicked down with mud, naked children running about laughing, playing during such a solemn ceremony, men painted in frightening mud masks, dancing and telling stories of animals, hunts, and wars. This is what makes a good wedding, to your mind?
No, those things aren't what I meant. Or material, Keelan stammered.
It's what was in their hearts that made it so special.
It was that they sincerely shared our joy that made it meaningful to us. And what does that have to do with offering rice cakes to imagined evil spirits? With a side of a finger, Anne ordered one of the lines on the grace, the line representing the underworld.
When you say, "Dear spirits, watch over my departed mother's soul," do you expect the dear spirits to rush of a sudden to do so because you put words to the wish?
Keelan could feel her face flush. She often asked the dear spirits to watch over her mother's soul. She was beginning to see why Zed found the woman so vexing. Richard came to Kaelin's rescue. The prayers are not actually meant as a direct request, since we know the spirits don't work in such simple ways, but are meant to convey heartfelt feelings of love and hope for her mother's peace in the next world. He stroked his finger along the opposite side of the same line Anne had ordered. The same as my prayers for my mother, he added in a whisper. Anne's cheeks plumped as she smiled.
So they are, Richard. The mud people must know better than to try to bribe with rice cakes the powerful forces they believe in and fear, don't you suppose?
It's the act of making the offering that's important, Richard said. By his unruffled attitude toward the woman, it was apparent to Keelan that Richard had learned to pick the berries out of the nettles. Too, Keelan understood what he meant.
It's the supplication to forces they fear that is really meant to appease the unknown.
Anne's finger rose along with her brow.
Yes, the nature of the offering is really only symbolic, meant to show homage, and by such an obeisance to this power, they hope to placate it.
Anne's finger wilted.
Sometimes the act of courteous yielding is enough to stay an angry foe, yes?
Keelan and Richard both agreed it was.
Better to kill the foe and be done with it,
Kara sniped from back at the door. Anne chuckled, leaning back to look over at Kara.
Well, sometimes, my dear, there is merit to such an alternative.
And how would you kill evil spirits?
Zed asked in a thin voice that cut through the drumming of the rain. Kara didn't have an answer, and so she glared instead. Richard wasn't listening to them. He seemed to be transfixed by the grace as he spoke.
By the same token, evil spirits and such could be angered by a gesture of disrespect.
Keelan was just opening her mouth to ask Richard why he was suddenly taking the mud people's evil spirits so seriously, when Zed's fingers touched the side of her leg. His sidelong glance told her that he wanted her to be quiet.
Some think it so, Richard, Zed offered quietly.
Why did you draw this symbol, this grace? Richard asked.
Anne and I were using it to evaluate a few matters. At times a grace can be invaluable. A grace is a simple thing, and yet it is infinitely complex. Learning about the grace is a lifetime's journey, but like a child learning to walk, it begins with a first step. Since you were born with a gift, we also thought this would be a good time to introduce you to it.
Richard's gift was largely an enigma to him. Now that they were back with his grandfather, Richard needed to delve the mysteries of that birthright and at last begin to chart the foreign landscape of his power. Kalin wished they had the time Richard needed, but they didn't.
Zed, I'd really like you to take a look at Junie's body.
The rain will let up in a while, Zed soothed, and then we will go have a look.
Richard dragged a finger down the end of a line representing the gift, representing magic.
If it's a first step and so important, Richard pointedly asked Anne, then why didn't the Sisters of the Light try to teach me about the grace when they took me to the Palace of the Prophets in the Old World, when they had the chance?
Kalin knew how quickly Richard became wary and distrustful when he thought he felt the tickling of a halter being slipped over his ears, no matter how kindly done or how innocent its intent. Anne's sisters had once put a collar around his throat. Anne stole a glance at Zed.
The Sisters of the Light had never before attempted to instruct one such as yourself, one born with the gift for subtractive magic in addition to the usual additive.
She chose her words carefully.
Prudence was required.
Richard's voice had made the subtle shift from questioned to questioner.
Yet now you think I should be taught this grace business?
Ignorance, too, is dangerous, Anne said in a cryptic murmur.
Chapter 5 Zed scooped up a handful of dry dirt from the ground to the side.
Anne is given to histrionics, he griped. I would have taught you about the grace long ago, Richard, but we've been separated, that's all.
His apprehension alleviated by his grandfather's words, if not Anne's, the sharply defined muscles in Richard's shoulders and thick neck relaxed as Zed went on.
Though a grace appears simple, it represents the whole of everything. It is drawn thus.
Zed leaned forward on his knees. With practiced precision, he let the dirt drizzle from the side of his fist to quickly trace in demonstration the symbol already drawn on the ground.
This outer circle represents the beginning of the underworld, the infinite world of the dead. Out beyond this circle, in the underworld, there is nothing else. There is only forever. This is why the grace is begun here, out of nothing, where there was nothing. Creation begins.
A square sat inside the outer circle, its corners touching the circle. The square contained another circle just large enough to touch the insides of the square. The center circle held an eight-pointed star. Straight lines drawn last radiated out from the points of the star, piercing all the way through both circles, every other line bisecting a corner of the square. The square represented the veil, separating the outer circle of the spirit world, the underworld, the world of the dead, from the inner circle, which depicted the limits of the world of life. In the center of it all, the star expressed the light, the Creator, with the rays of his gift of magic coming from that light passing through all the boundaries. I've seen it before. Richard turned his wrists over and rested them across his knees. The silver wristbands he wore were girded with strange symbols, but on the center of each, at the insides of his wrists, there was a small grace on each band. As they were on the undersides of the wrists, Kalin had never before noticed them. The grace is a depiction of the continuum of the gift, Richard said, represented by the rays, from the Creator, through life, and at death crossing the veil to eternity, with the spirits in the Keeper's realm of the underworld. He burnished a thumb across the designs on one wristband. It is also a symbol of hope to remain in the Creator's light from birth through life and beyond in the afterlife of the underworld. Zed blinked in surprise.
Very good, Richard. But how did you know this?
I've learned to understand the jargon of emblems, and I've read a few things about the grace.
The jargon of emblems?
Kalin could see that Zed was making a great effort at restraining himself.
You need to know, my boy, that a grace can invoke alchemy of consequence. A grace, if drawn with dangerous substances such as sorcerer's sand, or used in some other ways, can have profound effects,
such as altering the way the worlds interact, so as to accomplish an end, Richard finished. He looked up. I've read a little about it. Zed sat back on his heels.
More than a little, it would seem. I want you to tell us everything you've been doing since I was with you last.
He shook a finger.
Every bit of it.
What's a fatal grace? Richard asked instead.
Zed leaned in, this time clearly astounded.
A what?
Fatal grace, Richard murmured, as his gaze roamed the drawing on the floor.
Kaelin didn't have any more idea what Richard was talking about than did Zed, but she was familiar with his behavior. Now and again she had seen Richard like this, almost as if he were in another place, asking curious questions while he considered some dim, dark dilemma. It was the way of a seeker. It was also a red flag that told her he believed there was something seriously amiss. She felt goosebumps tingling up her forearms. Kaelin caught the grave twitch of Anne's brow. Zed was straining near to bursting with a thousand questions, but Kaelin knew that he too was familiar with the way Richard sometimes lost himself for inexplicable reasons and asked unexpected questions. Zed was doing his best to oblige them. Zed rubbed his fingertips along the furrows of his forehead, taking a breath to gather his patience.
Bags, Richard. I've never heard of such a thing as a fatal grace. Where did you?
Just something I read somewhere, Richard murmured. Zed, can you put up another boundary? Call forth a boundary like you did before I was born? Zed's face scrunched up in sputtering frustration.
Why would I?
To wall off the old world and stop the war. Caught off guard, Zed paused with his mouth hanging open, but then a grin spread, stretching his wrinkled hide tight across the bones of his face.
Very good, Richard. You are going to make a fine wizard, always thinking of how to make magic work for you to prevent harm and suffering.
The smile faded.
Very good thinking indeed, but no, I can't do it again.
Why not?
It was a spell of threes. That means it was bound up in three of this and three of that. Powerful spells are usually well protected. A prescript of threes being only one means of keeping dangerous magic from being easily loosed. The boundary spell was one of those. I found it in an ancient text from the Great War. Seems you take after your grandfather, taking an interest in reading old books full of odd things.
His brow drew down.
The difference is, I had studied my whole life, and I knew what I was doing. Knew the dangers and how to avoid or minimize them. Knew my own abilities and limitations. Big difference, my boy.
There were only two boundaries, Richard pressed.
Ah, well, the Midlands were embroiled in a horrific war with Dahara.
Zed folded his legs under himself as he told the story.
I used the first of the three to learn how to work the spell, how it functioned, and how to unleash it. The second I used to separate the Midlands and Dahara to stop the war. The last of the three I used to partition off Westland, for those who wanted a place to live free of magic, thereby preventing an uprising against the gifted.
Kaelin had had a hard time imagining what a world without magic would be like. The whole concept seemed grim and dark to her, but she knew there were those who wanted nothing more than to live their lives free from magic. Westland, though not vast, provided such a place. At least it had for a time, but no longer.
No more boundaries, Zed threw his hands up. That's that.
It had been almost a year since the boundaries were brought down by Darkin Rall, fading away to rejoin the three lands again. It was unfortunate that Richard's idea wouldn't work, that they couldn't cordon off the old world and prevent the war from enveloping the new world. It would have saved countless lives yet to be lost in a struggle only just beginning.
Do either of you, Anne asked into the silence, have any idea of the whereabouts of the prophet Nathan?
I saw him last, Kaelin said.
He helped me save Richard's life by giving me the book stolen from the Temple of the Winds, and telling me the words of magic I needed to use to destroy the book and keep Richard alive until he could recover from the plague. Anne was looking like a wolf about to have dinner.
And where might he be?
It was somewhere in the old world. Sister Verna was there. Someone Nathan cared deeply for had just been murdered before his eyes. He said that sometimes prophecy overwhelms our attempts to outwit it, and that sometimes we think we are more clever than we are, believing we can stay the hand of fate if we wish it hard enough.
Kaelin dragged a finger through the dirt.
He left with two of his men, Walsh and Bolliston, saying he was giving Richard back his title of Lord Rall. He told Verna to save herself the trouble of trying to follow. He said she wouldn't succeed.
Kaelin looked up into Anne's suddenly sorrowful eyes.
I think Nathan was going off to try to forget whatever it was that ended that night, to forget the person who had helped him and lost her life for it. I don't think you'll find him until he wishes it.
Zed slapped the palms of his hands against his knees, breaking the spell of silence.
I want to know everything that's happened since I've last seen you, Richard. Since the beginning of last winter, the whole story.
Don't leave anything out. The details are important. You may not understand that, but details can be critical. I must know it all.
Richard looked up long enough to catch his grandfather's expression of intent expectation.
I wish we had time to tell you about it, Zed, but we don't.
Kaelin, Kara, and I need to get back to Aidendrill. Anne's fingers fussed with a button on her collar. Kaelin thought the garden facade of her forbearance looked to be growing weeds.
We can begin now and talk more on the journey.
You can't imagine how much I wish we could stay with you, but there's no time for such a journey, Richard said. We must hurry back. We'll have to go in the Slif. I'm sorry. I really am, but you can't come with us through the Slif. You'll have to travel to Aidendrill on your own. When you get there, we can talk.
Slif?
Zed's nose wrinkled with the word.
What are you talking about?
Richard didn't answer or even seem to hear. He was watching the cloth-covered window. Kaelin answered for him.
The Slif is a...
She paused. How did one explain such a thing?
Well, she's sort of like living Quicksilver. She can communicate with us. Talk, I mean.
Talk, Zed repeated in a flat voice.
What does she talk about?
It's not the talking that's important. With a thumbnail, Kaelin picked at the seam in her pant leg as she stared into Zed's hazel eyes. The Slif was created by those wizards in the Great War. They created weapons out of people. They created a Slif in much the same way. She was once a woman. They used her life to create the Slif, a being that can use magic to do what is called traveling. She was used to quickly travel great distances, really great distances, like from here all the way to Aidendrill in less than a day, or many other places. Zed considered her words, as startling as she knew they must be to him. It had been so for her at first. Such a journey would ordinarily take many days, even on horseback. It could take weeks. Kaelin put a hand on his arm. I'm sorry, Zed, but you and Anne can't go. The Slif's magic, as you were explaining, has dictates protecting it. That's why Richard had to leave his sword behind. Its magic is incompatible with the magic of the Slif. To travel in the Slif, you must have at least some small amount of subtracted magic as well as the additive. You don't have any subtracted magic. You and Anne would die in the Slif. I have an element of it bound into my confessor's power, and Kara used her ability as a Mord Sith to capture the gift of an Andolian, who has an element of it, so she can travel too, and of course Richard has the gift for subtractive magic.
You've been using subtractive magic, but how, what do you, where?
Zed sputtered, losing track of which question he wanted to ask first. The Slif exists in these stone wells. Richard called the Slif, and now we can travel in her. But we have to be careful, or Jigang can send his minions through. Kaelin tapped the insides of her wrist together. When we're not traveling, Richard sends her into her sleep by touching his wristbands together, on the graces they have, and she rejoins her soul in the underworld. Anne's face had gone ashen.
Zed, I've warned you about this. We can't let him run around by himself. He's too important. He's going to get himself killed.
Zed looked ready to explode.
You use the graces on the wristbands? Bags, Richard, you have no idea what you're doing. You are messing about with the veil when you do such a thing.
Richard, his attention elsewhere, snapped his fingers and gestured toward the fat sticks under the bench. He waggled his fingers urgently. Frowning, Zed passed him one of the stout branches. Richard broke it in two over his knee while he watched the window. With the next flash of lightning, Kaelin saw the silhouette of a chicken perched on the sill of the window on the other side of the cloth. As the lightning flashed and thunder boomed, the chicken's shadow sidled to the other corner of the window. Richard hurled the stick. It caught the bird square on the breast. With a flapping of wings and a startled squawk, it tumbled backwards out of the window.
Richard! Kaelin snatched his sleeve. Why would you do such a thing? The chicken wasn't bothering anyone. The poor thing was just trying to stay out of the rain.
This, too, he seemed not to hear. He turned toward Anne. You lived in the old world with him. How much do you know about the Dreamwalker?
Well, I guess I know a bit,
she stammered in surprise. You know about how Jigang can invade a person's mind, slip in between their thoughts, and entrench himself there, even without their knowledge?
Of course.
She almost looked indignant at such a basic question about the enemy they were fighting.
But you and those bonded to you are protected. The Dreamwalker can't invade the mind of one devoted to the Lord Rawl. We don't know the reason, only that it works.
Richard nodded. Ulrich, he's the reason. Zed blinked in confusion.
Who?
Ulrich Rawl, an ancestor of mine.
I read that the Dreamwalkers were a weapon devised 3,000 years ago in the Great War. Ulrich Rall created a spell, the Bond, to protect his people, or anyone sworn to him, from the Dreamwalkers. The Bond's power to protect passes down to every gifted Rall. Zed opened his mouth to ask a question, but Richard turned instead to Anne. Jigang entered the mind of a wizard and sent him to kill Kaelin and me, tried to use him as an assassin.
Wizard?
Anne frowned.
Who? Which wizard?
Marlin Picard, Kaelin said.
Marlin?
Anne sighed with a shake of her head.
The poor boy. What happened to him?
The Mother Confessor killed him,
Kara said without hesitation. She is a true sister of the Aegil. Anne folded her hands in her lap and leaned toward Kaelin.
But how did you ever find out?
We would expect him to try such a thing again, Richard interrupted, drawing Anne's attention back. But can a Dreamwalker invade the mind of something other than a person? Anne considered the question with more patience than Kaelin thought it merited.
No, I don't believe so.
You don't believe so? Richard cocked his head. Are you guessing, or are you certain? It's important. Please, don't guess. She shared a long look with Richard before finally shaking her head.
No, he can't do such a thing.
She's right, Zed insisted. I know enough about what he can do to know what he can't do. A soul is needed. A soul like his own. Otherwise, it just won't work. Same as he couldn't project his mind into a rock to see what it was thinking.
With his first finger, Richard stroked his lower lip. Then it's not Jigang, he muttered to himself. Zed rolled his eyes in exasperation.
What's not Jigang?
Kaelin sighed. Sometimes attempting to follow Richard's reasoning was like trying to spoon ants.
Chapter 6 Rather than answer Zed's question, Richard seemed to once again already be half a mile down a different road.
The chimes. Did you take care of them? It's supposed to be a simple matter. Did you take care of it?
A simple matter?
Zed's face stood out, red against the shock of unruly white hair.
Who told you that?
Richard looked surprised at the question. I read it. So, did you take care of it?
We determined there was nothing to take care of,
Anne said, her voice taking on an undertone of annoyance.
That's right, Zed grumbled. What do you mean it's a simple matter?
Kolo said they were quite alarmed at first, but after investigating, they discovered the chimes were a simple weapon and easily overcome. Richard threw up his hands.
How do you know it's not a problem? Are you certain?
Kolo? Bags, Richard, what are you talking about? Who's Kolo?
Richard waggled a hand as if begging forbearance before he rose up and strode to the window. He lifted the curtain. The chicken wasn't there. While he stretched up on his toes to peer out into the driving rain, Kaelin answered for him. Richard found a journal in the keep. It's written in High Dharan. He and one of the Mordsith, Berdeen, who knows a little of the dead language of High Dharan, have worked very hard to translate some of it. The man who wrote the journal was a wizard at the keep during the Great War, but they don't know his name, so they call him Kolo, from a High Dharan word meaning strong advisor. The journal has proved invaluable. Zed turned to peer suspiciously at Richard. His gaze returned to Kaelin. The suspicion moved to his voice.
And just where did he find this journal?
Richard began pacing, his fingertips to his forehead in deep concentration. Zed's hazel eyes waited for her answer.
It was in the Slith's room, down in the big tower.
The big tower?
The way Zed repeated her words sounded like an accusation. He again glanced briefly at Richard.
Don't tell me you mean the room that's sealed.
That's the one. When Richard destroyed the towers between the new and old worlds so he could get back here, the seal was blasted off that room, too. That's where he found the journal, Kolo's bones, and the Slith. Richard halted over his grandfather.
Zed, we'll tell you about all this later. Right now, I'd like to know why you don't think the chimes are here.
Kaelin frowned up at Richard.
Here? What does that mean, here?
Here, in this world.
Zed, how do you know?
Zed straightened a finger toward the empty spot in their circle on the floor around the grace.
Sit down, Richard. You're making me jumpy, pacing back and forth like a hound wanting to be let out.
As Richard checked the window one last time before returning to sit, Kaelin asked Zed,
what are the chimes?
Oh, Zed said with a shrug. They're just some vexatious creatures, but...
Vexatious?
Anne slapped her forehead.
try catastrophic.
And I called them forth? Kaelin asked, anxiety rising in her voice. She had spoken the names of the three chimes to complete magic that saved Richard's life. She hadn't known what the words meant, but she had known that without them, Richard would have died within a breath or two at the most. Zed waggled a hand to allay her fears.
No, no, as Anne says, they have the potential to be troublesome, but...
Richard hiked up his trousers at the knees as he folded his legs. Zed, please answer the question. How do you know they aren't here?
Because the chimes are a work of threes. That's partly why there are three. Richani, Centrosi, Vasi.